Oh, welcome to Yada Yada Radio. It's my pleasure to be with you here on our celebration of the Shabbat. Didn't know if I was going to make it or not. My internet is about as slow as snail mail, and trying to get set up here on the East Coast with all the things that seem so easy on the West has been more of a challenge than I expected. Hello, Larry. Hi.
Where are you at, Yana?
I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia this evening.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I drove across country the days that you and Scott filled in for me, and then also on the following Monday, which was my 30th anniversary, I was driving across country. And
well, happy 30th, sir.
Yeah, thank you. So
belated as it is.
Yeah. I'm back here in Charlottesville, and I've found that things aren't quite as easy to accomplish.
I remember
here on
this
a
last
farm.
Year. you were running into an office you hadn't been in for a couple years.
Oh my! Not only that, the connectivity and like monitors and computers and everything here is the Stone Age compared to what I'm used to. So it is a challenge. I appreciate you guys doing the Shattering Myth Show and also covering for the Shabbat program.
No, it was a pleasure. It really was.
Easy
to work with, let me tell you.
Yeah,
well, I don't need to tell you that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to bring something up here, if I could. Last night, we went out to a movie and dinner and saw a World War II movie called Fury.
Right.
Actually, very well done movie. But they kept working in the angle. You know, I don't know if you know who Shia LaBeouf is or not, but he was one of the actors in there, and kept bringing in the Bible and Bible passages.
Oh,
you know,
to
as I listened
war.
To it. Well, no, well, just to, it wasn't so much to justify war as it was for him, you know, doing his best, playing his part, you know, willing to go down with the ship kind of thing. And, you know, they were a tank crew. Truth is, the movie's pretty anti-war because it just shows the blatant brutality of war. I mean, that's really what it does. And, you know, the guy
you
that did it,
a bunch of
awesome
average
John
Joes
Killian.
That put them in a situation where it's kill or be killed.
Brainwash them and put them in a tank where there's no chance they can win. Right. You know.
Right.
But it was interesting because they quoted it. He quoted an Isaiah passage, a Yasha Yahu passage, something about, you know, I was looking for a person to come forward, and I said, pick me, you know. And you know, this was what he was quoting. And, of course, you know, as you said here from an American standpoint, you know, many years ago, that might have even worked on me or you.
Yeah, yeah.
But the truth
actually,
is, Yahweh didn't have a dog in
there.
Is
no pick, there is no pick me. There is Yahweh saying that I looked for someone and could find no one. I wanted to convey my message and found no one to work with. So it isn't a situation where somebody is saying pick me. It's God saying there is no one.
Yeah, well, it's a misquote. I mean, and the whole concept is out of order. The point that I was making is that, you know, you would think, you know, from an American point of view in World War II, God is on your side, right?
Of course,
you wouldn't be getting wiped out like that if he were. But truth is, God didn't have a dog in that fight at all.
No.
As hard as that is, that's the truth.
Yeah, in fact, it's even more absurd when you think of the first and second Jewish revolts against Rome. You would think that God would be on the side of the chosen people, on the side of Israel against Rome. But
he didn't have
a dog in that fight either.
I just wanted to point this out, you know. It's kind of a way that even takes it a step further, yes. But, you know, it's just sort of the brainwashing that comes in, you know, in every facet of our society. That's something that, you know, it works well. It really does work well to brainwash people, but yeah. You know, once you know
the
truth,
the last
you hear these
bastion
things,
of complete brainwashing in the country. I mean, there are those evangelical and Roman Catholic Christians who have it bad, who are blind, completely blinded by their religion, but most Christians now are highly skeptical. And there are some liberal, communist, socialists that are have it pretty bad. I mean, they're in really deep, particularly with the gay and lesbian movements and environmental movement and the global warming and all of that. They're in really deep and beyond the reach of evidence and reason. But when it – and there's some diehard Republicans and Democrats. But I think when you get down to it, the only significant brainwashing influence that actually has a hold on the majority is the military.
Patriotism.
And patriotism. Yeah. That's
yep.
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that Hebrew doesn't have a word for religion. And so God didn't tell Abraham to walk away from religion. Now, Babylon is equated not only with religion, but with Satan. And Babylon's equated with jaundiced economic schemes and political schemes and militarism. But Yahweh does have a word for country. And Hebrew has a word for country. And the first thing that Abraham was asked to walk away from is country. And therefore, that's the thing that has the widest grip on Americans, and I dare say most people around the world, is the patriotism for their country.
I know that had me.
Yes. Really bad in Texas. I think that Texas is probably the worst place in the country for a militaristic patriotism. Is when I was visiting with my son, we were talking about the unique flavor of Texas, and not only is Protestant religiosity strong there, but the patriotism in Texas is really focused on the military. It's more of a military patriotism than it is anything else, and that's the one thing that if you look at the Pew polls that came out about 6 months ago, where Americans were asked to express whether or not they had a favorable, unfavorable, extremely favorable, or extremely unfavorable view of the judicial system, Congress, the White House, Supreme Court, justice system, police. It went on and on down the list. Religion, Christianity in particular. And with everything except one thing, which was the military, the overwhelming preponderance of people said that they had little or no faith, little or no favorable view of, and the militaristic patriotism is the last bastion of broad-based indoctrination.
You cannot question the soldier.
No,
the
soldier.
They are good, they are righteous, they are the greatest, the best of the best. No matter what any of them say or do, they are better than you.
Yeah. And, of course, they're the worst of the worst. The vast preponderance of men and women that go into the military do so because they like the hunt. They like the idea of being armed and licensed to kill. It is a very significant percentage of those that go into the military. And if you go into a drafting office of the military, they're looking for the disadvantaged, the downtrodden, the kid that can pass a high school equivalency test, but nothing more. So it's definitely the antithesis of what it's projected to be. And my issue with the military, beyond the fact that it cost the nation its prosperity,
trillions.
Yeah, 50% of our total debt comes from military spending.
Right, and it precludes the people to have any influence over their government because they can't go up against the military state. But the worst part is that our military has been deployed consistently, making bad things worse, making America more vulnerable. And we would be so much safer, so much more secure without it. But beyond my conclusions that that's the nature of the military, the very first thing that Yahweh asked Abraham to walk away from, if he wanted to participate in the covenant, was his country. And so if you're not willing to do that, you're not invited into the covenant. So,
you know, one of the beautiful things that you pointed out, you were talking about Lot, you know, and how, you know, he throws his daughter out to be raped. Remember that?
Right.
You know? Right. And you say, well, would you consider that a righteous act? And, you know, of course, hell no, I wouldn't. But then, you know, Yahweh's ways are not our ways. And we've been taught to believe just the opposite.
Right.
You know, you stand up, you be loyal, you honor this, you honor that. You know, I watch a lot of these whodunit shows, and there was a woman who was literally grabbed off out of her own driveway and gang raped by four animals for 2 days. Mm. And she finally escaped. And then when the police came, she didn't really give them the correct make, model, and color of the car because she wanted to keep her word that she would not turn them in if they let her live. And then, of course, later when she thought about it, that was stupid. But, you know, I mean, we've gotten to a point where people think defending what is completely indefensible, and that was an example of it, is some kind of righteous action, and it's not.
No, and
I hope I was able to draw an analogy there, but that's really what's going on. I mean, we're being raped.
We're being raped.
Figuratively, anyway.
We are being raped. It's absolutely true. I used to be a flag waving, literally flag waving. I had always had a flag in my front yard. A flag waving, pro military. Like, I could not understand how anybody could be unsupportive of the military, and I was supportive of our actions in Vietnam, which of course was extraordinarily counterproductive. But I recall how pro-military I was. And I only became anti-military when I came to understand the terms and conditions of the covenant. I think all of us are in exactly the same arc here, if we're going to use a boat metaphor. And that is that once we know Yahweh's position, we accept it. Yahweh's position is anti-country, anti-patriotism, anti-religion. And so
he's anti-power structure in general.
Right.
Anti-human
institution.
I mean,
so one, sure. I think this is really an interesting experience, though, is that we, most of us here, JB, you said you were of this ilk, too. And I know you were, Larry, and I know I was. We were pro-military. You know, Don is such a marvelous contributor to the family. Don was a Marine. Many of us were very pro-military. When we came to know that Yahweh was opposed to country and human institutions, and therefore patriotism, and the very essence of country now is militarism, and that he called Rome the worst country ever to exist, and Rome was essentially a militaristic nation. That once we came to know that's God's position, that if you want to participate in the covenant, the first thing you have to do is walk away from your country, then all of us, without exception, said, okay, that means that I shouldn't be patriotic, I shouldn't be political, I shouldn't be pro-military. We all came to the same conclusion. But what's really interesting then is then when you study the nature of the military, when you study the nature of the things that God has been opposed to, you saw the movie Fury. Fury does a good job of explaining the hellish nature of war and that wars are rotten. It's the worst of humankind on display at war. And then we began to study the military. And when you study the military, what you find is that most of the wars that are fought, the war is begun by a series of lies. And then stupid decisions are made that cost the lives of thousands, if not millions, of people. And people act savagely. And even nations that claim to be basically good ultimately resort to terrorism to subject others to their will. And when you look at the American military that's supposed to be the bastion of good, and you realize that almost every death in Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. military lied to the American people, to the media, and to those families as to how those people died. And they put them in harm's way, lying about who the enemy was. And they broke a country, making a bad situation infinitely worse. And we continue to make the same mistakes with our military, making us ourselves more vulnerable. So the thing that I like about this, although speaking against the military puts us at odds with the vast majority of people, when you find out what God is opposed to, you always find that the things that he is opposed to are indeed rotten. So that was I was not overtly opposed to Christianity until I came to know the Torah and subsequently came to know that Paul was a complete fraud. And then once you come to know that God is against the religion, then you find out how really rotten the religion is. God's not opposed to country because he's jealous. It's because it's bad for him.
Well, because he's telling you not to be a sucker. He doesn't want to see people put in submission.
Right.
Subjugation is not something he promotes. I mean, the military is total subjugation. The interesting thing about the military, if you want to know the truth, there is that, but from the time you walk into a boot camp, to a couple of months later, they put you into a culture shock. It's just a culture
brainwash
shock all out, and it is
really no different than Jim Jones or the Branch Davidians. The kind of constant brainwashing and isolation from the rest of the world that exists.
Well,
in those
it's actually beyond that. It's well beyond that, because you have every area of your life telling you what you're doing is right. Movies.
Yeah.
Everything. So
right.
You go in there and you do this and you excel, and I did, believe me. And when you walk out of boot camp, oddly enough, this is a very strange thing, and anybody that's been in the military will tell you this, when you just walk out of basic training, forget when you get into advanced training, but you walk out of basic training and you're sitting in a home with a bunch of civilians, you feel like you don't relate. You don't connect. Not at all.
Yeah, you're special.
Not even a little.
Yeah,
you're not special. No, when I was in, there was not a whole special thing about the military back then when I was in. Today they're doing it because they want to advance so many more wars. But near the end of the Vietnam era, you were a complete bastard. That's not the point. You literally cannot connect with civilians anymore. You just can't. I mean, you can on some small level, hello, be polite, stuff like that, but you don't relate anymore.
Well, there
that's
is a serious problem today because I can give you three evidences that the military is destroying people's minds. I mean, literally causing
the suicide rate for one thing.
The one thing is the suicide rate, and the suicide rate is astronomical. It's 80 per day.
Oh yeah.
80 per day is over the course of the Afghanistan and Iraq war. It's in the hundreds of thousands. I mean, we're approaching the deaths associated with World War II based upon the suicides of returning vets. So the suicides tell you that they have so twisted people's minds, they have promoted so many disorienting lies, things that just don't equate to truth, that the the only remedy is for the returning vets to kill themselves. Now, that's a problem of gargantuan magnitude that's not discussed. The second is that there are only 600,000 at any one time U.S. military that are even in a position to engage in a combat situation. That takes all of the Marines, that's 100% of the Marines and 100% of the U.S. Army. And the actual number to be exposed to combat is about one quarter of that number at any one time. So, but the entire pool of potential subject to combat is 600,000 in the U.S. military. Do you know how many U.S. military vets there are today that have claimed post-traumatic stress syndrome?
No, I don't.
600,000.
Way up there.
600,000.
I know several of them.
Yeah. And they receive $6,000 a month in compensation from the U.S. government and enormous amounts of medication to numb the pain. But 600,000, that's more than actually have served in combat. That's how screwed up
that's
the military
bizarre.
Is. Now, let me give you the third.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre.
I have always, it's my contention that the canary in the mine shaft for human depravity is sexual abuse. If you are witnessing the degradation of women, of those who have less capability of defending themselves are abused, that's the canary in the mine shaft that says you've got a serious problem. And in Western society, the single most dangerous place to be a woman is in the U.S. military. You are 8 times more likely to be sexually assaulted in the U.S. military than in civilian life. And only 1% of perpetrators are actually convicted. If you want to be a rapist, join the military. 99% of military rapists are not prosecuted. I think that is the ultimate sign that we have a serious problem. And when you combine that with the fact that look what the military has done since World War II. And even in World War II, we left Asia and Europe worse than we found them. With Stalin killing between 30 and 40 million and Mao Zedong killing between 30 and 40 million and enslaving their populations. And then we did the mess of Korea, and then the absolute disaster of Vietnam, and then not one but two invasions, one proxy of Afghanistan, not one but two invasions of Iraq. In every situation, we made a bad situation worse at the cost of great amounts of blood and coin. And so when you look at that and the fact that America has been in a perpetual state of war, we fought 102 wars in the 400 years since the first colonists came here, you get an understanding as to why God is so opposed to an individual being patriotic. And it's not just America. I mean, look at the country that America emulates, Rome. We're more vicious still. So there is a reason that God asks us to do certain things. His guidance is in our best interest. Larry, I think you're the one who constantly reminds us that there is a very high price to pay initially in terms of isolation with the first term and condition of the covenant, to walk away from country, to walk away from societal customs and religion and politics, that initially it is quite isolating. It's a high price to pay. And you've brought that up many times. But I think every single one of us would say today that now that we have done it and that it is in our rear view mirror, that what we walked away from was revolting. And we are better off by far being separated from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I you know, we get members that come in, you know, we have some members that come in that are, you know, a former Mormons in Utah, you know, talking about isolating, you know.
Wow.
I mean, but yeah, sure. But you do it. And,
right.
You know, they
and
feel a lot better
it,
for it now.
Is that once you do it, that you're much better off for it. It's, I think it was James, but it may have been if it was someone else, and I apologize for not giving him credit. But one of the members of the covenant said, you know, when you analyze the five things that are required of us to participate in the covenant, while we talk about them being the terms and conditions of the covenant, and then there's five benefits of the covenant, all five of the things that are asked of us are benefits for us, including walking away from our country.
Well, you're not hemmed in anymore. You're really not hemmed in. It's not provincial thinking. You've opened your mind. I mean,
right.
I don't suspect that there's anything, and you know, I've been over this 1,000 times. Don't look at Yada. Don't look at James. Don't look at Larry for guidance. You know, we're not the people to emulate. You know, if you want to do that kind of thing, go read Paul. You know,
right?
Who
said submit to your government?
For it.
Yeah, submit to your government. Did you? Is there any mention of Yahusha ever hoisting the Star of David?
No.
Any mention of him ever swearing a pledge of allegiance to Israel?
No, not at all.
No. Is there any mention of him engaging in Israeli politics?
No, he condemned the politicians around.
Did he ever run for public office?
No.
Did he ever express any support for electing a public official?
No.
No. Did he ever support the military?
No.
Did he engage in the military?
No, he didn't.
Did he encourage anyone to participate in the military?
No, he didn't.
Did he ever
speak
to the military? Did he ever praise the military?
Israel. No.
Did he ever speak of the benefit of religion?
No.
No. Nope.
Quite
the
opposite. Did he ever engage in a religious activity?
No, he condemned them.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I know they have all the copy edits where he says, let's stop and all pray. I don't even think he ever did that, to be honest with you. But, you know, no, he didn't. He downed religion roundly. He pointed to the religious and said, don't be like that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So when you recognize that, since he is the example to follow, it's certainly not me, it's certainly not you guys either. He's the ultimate example. Actually, I think Yahweh is the ultimate example, but Yahusha is a tangible manifestation of Yahweh. He was not political. He was not religious. He was apolitical.
He was not academic either. He didn't go up to the most learned people to get those folks to walk with him. He went down and got the guys at the river, you know.
Kind of interesting.
The way it is.
He was 12 years old. He was teaching. He wasn't taught.
Yeah, that's right.
He never said, I learned at the feet of Gamaliel. Like all this.
He never Gamaliel
said,
I
succeeded in Judaism far beyond any of my race, like Paul did. No, his example is consistent with the Torah instructions, which is to walk away from and be separate of those things. As a matter of fact, one of the most interesting statements, I think, in the entirety of the eyewitness accounts is where Yahusha is out sailing with his disciples. Now, and they were pretty good on the water. They were fishermen, after all, most of them. And he speaks of bread. And they said, oh, my God, we forgot the bread. I'm so sorry. You know, stupid us. Let's go back and we'll get some bread. And he said, moron, if I wanted bread, what happened when I spoke to the thousands? did I not create all the bread that everybody could possibly eat and there was bread left over? Well, yeah. Okay. So I'm not talking about actual bread here. I want to make a point about yeast. What yeast represents is the scribes and the Pharisees. Now, the scribes represented liberal politicians. The Pharisees were fundamentalist religious types. And he says, that's the yeast. So when we wonder, if we ever question what it is that is being removed by matzah, when we remove yeast, when Yahweh was removing the children of Israel from the most political and religious place on earth, the yeast he's removing is religion and politics.
Oh, they're beating up on me in here in the chat room. Okay.
What?
It's all true. I'm just saying, you know, you watch this and you think about every facet of society that's designed to trick people. You know, and here you got this incredibly well-done movie. And, I mean, it was very well done.
Fury.
I actually
was planning on seeing it a couple of nights ago. I read a review on it, and the reason that I was prone to want to see it is that the review said it is one of the few war movies that actually does not glorify war. It shows war for the horror that it is.
Oh, it is. It's just, it's a horror show. It shows how people are just debased, you know.
Yeah.
And I would recommend anybody see it, you know. It doesn't soft shoe anything.
The problem with, you know, movies is that they're all have aspects to them that are, you just say, oh gosh, that is really awful. And of course, the Bible verses punctuating this would probably be awful. But, you know, it's part of, we don't have a lot of wonderful choices these days. The other movie I'd like to see is Interstellar. And, you know, quite honestly, I am fascinated by the idea of being able to go visit new worlds. And, you know, one day we're actually going to be able to do that. You can't do it through a wormhole. The whole interstellar concept is false. But we will be able to do it when we are...
a good movie.
Yeah, I think it'll be entertaining. You know, it's why I liked the Star Trek series, is they were going off and being exposed to new worlds, and it expands your mind as to what might be out there. That's kind of how I'm expecting that we're going to spend eternity, except we're not going to need the spacecraft. We're not going to need guns. We won't need our phasers. We're not going to need shields. And we won't have to go at warp speed. Well, that's the beauty of light. Is there any concern about or any thought about, I'd like to, unless there's an objection, I'd like to return to where we were on the 119th Psalm, which was...
I object.
Okay. All right.
Go right ahead.
We had passed 137, but I'd like to keep the group together.
Okay.
All right. It's brought to us by the Tazdeh. The Tazdeh is the basis of one of the most repeated and among the most important words in Hebrew. Tzedak is the Hebrew word for upright, righteous, right, vindicated, not guilty. When Yahweh speaks of his perception of Dod, the verb that he uses to describe Dod is tzedak. Tzedak is the most important of the Tazdeh words. It's interesting that this word tzedak, which is vindication and uprightness, is drawn in the form of a person laying down, which suggests that we are the beneficiaries of this, and that we can relax in the as part of the process of being vindicated, where we have to engage actively to participate in the covenant. the vindication that follows, that is a benefit of participating in the covenant, is something that occurs while we are laying down. We're resting. Now, if you even look at Yahusha, you know, his body was destroyed the night of Pesach, his body would have been in the Tazdeh position as Matzah began, because it, you know, it's destroyed that night, but before that night is the beginning of Matzah. His soul was already in Sheol, and he was in that exact position that of the Tazdeh. If you know, it's actually a person. Their head, you can see, is laying down. The back is flat, but the knees are up and the feet are down. If you look at the way that a body was buried in the sepulchers, they cut shelves in limestone, but these shelves were not as long. They weren't 6 feet long. They were, because there was so much work to do, they were more like, you know, 4 feet. So the only way that you could put in a body was exactly as the letter Tazdeh is drawn. So there is a direct connection to what Yahusha was accomplishing, Yahweh was accomplishing, on Matzah, on our behalf, that brings us this important word, which is upright. So for us to be upright, he had to be in that position. And beyond that, we then benefit from being vindicated without any effort on our part. But it's an interesting letter that brings us this profound word. So 137 begins, Yahweh, you are the upright one, righteous, consistent, and vindicating, Tzedak. And your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, Misvat, is therefore upright and straightforward, Yatzar. Well, we've been over this passage before. The thing that strikes me that's the most important is that, you know,
the Misvat's upright and straightforward. I mean, upright, literally, and straightforward. That's really quite a statement.
Yeah, there are, I should say, really two profound insights here. The first is that Misvat, the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, is defined by Tzedak. So Tzedak, vindication, being upright and righteous, defines this concept of Misvat. It is the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes. That's important. But the other thing that's important is that Yahweh is the source of vindication. And as the source of vindication, he is the upright one. We become upright because he's upright. We become righteous because he's righteous. We become consistent with the standard because he's consistent with the standard. And so this is another place where we find that Yahweh's nature and his word and his plan and the benefits associated with him are all the same. They're inseparable. Yahweh is Tzedak. Therefore, Yahweh can offer Tzedak. The means to execute and deliver the benefits of the Misvat, which is Yahweh's means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, is Yahweh himself being upright, being the upright one, hanging on the upright pole. You know, being the one who is consistent with his promises, vindicating us. That Dode had it figured out, that the benefits of the covenant through the Misvat are delivered by Yahweh himself because he is what he is promising. There's no difference between Yahweh's character and the Misvat. One and the same. So I think both of those things are profound, and I even like the fact that they are further defined by Yasar, which is upright and straightforward. It, in case you had any question as to how to properly define Tzedak, and understand that most Bibles translate Tzedak as righteous. So it'd be, the Lord, you are righteous, in most English translations. But the problem with righteous is that it takes on a religious connotation. And so it makes it almost sound like the Lord is religious. But the word Tzedak is defined by Yashar, upright, straightforward. Tzedak means, the primary meaning of Tzedak is upright. And those who are upright, and the concept here was, if you're guilty, you're bowed down before the judge. If you're not guilty, you're standing. You know, those who are not guilty stand, those who are guilty bow down. Those who are enslaved, bow down. Those who are free, stand up. If you're liberated, you're walking. If you're not, you're down on your knees. So it's a very powerful concept here, and completely defined by Yahweh. He makes it such that if you're a thinking, searching, open-minded individual, you will understand who he is and what he's offering by the way that he's woven those three words together.
Well, and it's a giant concept, too. And I just want to point out again, you know, when you're sitting there and you're joining the covenant, it is never you doing the bowing down.
Right.
Quite literally, Yahweh bowing down to
right.
help us, not to worship us.
Right.
And he does all the work. It's the old story of when you were in college and you threw the nickel up on the, or 50 cents or whatever
yeah.
it was, up on the table. Once you realize that it isn't your doing or kind heart or great thoughts or wonderful intentions that really get anything done, once you give the credit to the person or the individual that deserves it, and that would be Yahweh, you know, last
yeah.
I checked,
yeah.
you know, then you're on the right page. You know, you're on the righteous path that
right.
you didn't blaze, he did. But,
yeah,
you know,
fact,
just
that's
by
one of
staying
the things
on
that
path,
saying,
you're right? in good shape.
Yeah, this
What's
is that? One of the things that this is saying. Is it saying that Yahweh
yes,
himself
exactly.
is the means to deliver the misfot?
Yes.
That's what it's saying.
Yeah.
Yahweh himself.
Yeah.
So who is Yahusha? Yahweh saving us. And therefore, to
right.
make a religion out
of
Jesus Christ misses the entire message that's being communicated here.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And regardless of what they say, they all say, well, Paul said the opposite. You don't earn your way. No, you're constantly earning your way. You were running in a race like it was, you know, you were an Olympic runner trying to come in first and all this. That's not what you're doing here. You're sharing Yahweh's words, which are rational. I mean, it all makes sense. Because if I'm to rely on me, I have no idea how to, you know, amplify myself into the next life. I don't
this
have a clue.
Right.
If I'm
right. This falls right into the concept of where we're constantly encouraged in this psalm to trust and rely on Yahweh, trust and rely on the Torah. They're one and the same. Because when you trust and rely on Yahweh and the Torah, you're trusting and relying on the means to salvation. The means to Tzedak, vindication, is Yahweh. He's the source of it. It says, you have completely laid out, you have provided and articulated your just, fair, unwavering, vindicating, restoring, and enduring testimony, Tzedek Edah, and exceedingly reliable, totally trustworthy, and always dependable nature, Ma'od Emuna. What I'm going to say now is one of the things that bothers me more maybe than anything else. It is so obvious in the Torah that Yahweh told us everything we needed to know to come to know who He is, to understand what He's offering, to appreciate how to engage in the covenant, to understand its conditions and benefits, and to ourselves benefit from His means to vindication and salvation. That He, as this verb says, He has completely laid out, He has provided and articulated a fair, unwavering, vindicating, restoring, and enduring testimony, which is trustworthy and reliable and always dependable. And yet, you have the two largest religions in the world, and if you count socialism, secularism, the three largest religions in the world, all completely ignoring and discounting what He said. It's the single greatest irritant in this whole process is coming to know the realization of what Dode has said here. That in the Torah, God told us everything we needed to know. And what do we need to know? Who He is, He tells us. What He's offering, He tells us. How to participate, He tells us. What the benefits are, He tells us. Everything we need to know is provided in the Torah. He has provided and articulated. And provided and articulated, He's done both. You know, He Himself is the upright one that made all of the benefits possible, and then He told us about it. I mean, it's so obvious, it's so clear, it's so appropriate that God would do exactly this, that it's just so irritating to me that millions of people claiming to speak for God completely discount it. It makes me mad.
The experts,
yeah.
No less. They're
the
experts.
It makes
experts.
Me mad.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, what I've found is that when you face the experts down with His words, you know what, to the last of them they do? They run.
Yeah, they run. Yeah, they run.
The last one I faced down was a partner with Nehemiah Gordon, you know, one of the great Puritan Jews that can't find Yahusha, he calls him Yeshua, of all insults. He cannot find Yahusha in the Torah. Can't find him.
Yeah, well.
Can't find him in the Torah.
You know where you first find Yahusha in the Torah? I'm going to be fair here. Yahusha is not mentioned a lot in the Torah, but he's there. You'll find him 220 times in the Torah prophets and Psalms. But you will find him in the Torah. You know where you find him?
Right away.
Actually, it's not right away in the Torah, because right away in the Torah,
well,
you have
to create. Well, he didn't name him by name. He says the Word was with God. Okay.
Yeah, but by name, Yahusha is first mentioned in the Torah in the Book of Shemot, Names, when Moshe was invited to go up Mount Horeb to receive the Torah and to dine and celebrate the relationship with Yahweh. One of the seven individuals that was on the mountain was Yahusha. So the first mention of Yahusha by name is during the revelation of the Torah on Mount Horeb with Moshe and Yahweh. The tangible manifestation of Yahweh that ate and drank with Moshe during the revelation of the Torah is Yahusha, and he is called Yahusha at that point. That's when he's first introduced by name. And then, of course, the book of Yahusha, it claims that he completed the Torah, which means that by that statement, that the book of Yahusha is actually the sixth book of the Torah. If Yahusha completed the Torah and the book of Yahusha, then the book of Yahusha is part of the Torah. So, but between the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, you'll find Yahusha written 220 times. So it's if you're not finding Yahusha in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, you aren't looking.
Well, that's kind of my point there. I mean, you know, you got this guy being exalted and held up as this genius who helped to translate the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know. And
I'm going to be blunt here because I think it's important. You really can't translate the Dead Sea Scrolls, with the exception of Yeshayahu. You have the entire book. So
yeah, the rest of them, you've got smatterings. I understand that.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, so you've got smatterings. So really all you can do is use the Qumran scrolls to correct the Masoretic for the portions of the Masoretic that you actually have an older manuscript. And so you can use it to correct, but you can't, this idea that you can create a Torah, Prophets, and Psalms based on the Qumran scrolls is
well,
not
it can't be done.
No. And
right.
Somebody that claims
to
have done that.
I don't think that they claim that. I think what he claims is that, you know, he helped decipher some of the smatterings or maybe some of Yeshayahu. I don't know. But that's the big claim. And the claim is he's really in there. He's got it going on. And you know, I don't find anybody to have it going on other than the translations I see from this group. I mean, honestly. So I found it laughable. It was his partner. It was, I think, it might have been William and me and Jossie, actually, that this was some time ago. They finally figured out that the wah was an O sound.
Yeah,
we said, well, we've known that forever. I mean, it's. And do you know how these hucksters came up with this concept? They claimed that a scribe forgot to take the O out, and they found it. In other words, they're saying that there was an O.
Well, you know,
it's just amazing.
Let me share two things that are important here. The first is the most important. And that is that if a person claims to be important because something that they are doing, that they have some claim to credibility, run from them.
Oh,
no
absolutely.
No one has prestige with Yahweh. No one earns credibility with Yahweh. If anybody claims credibility, then they're a fraud. That's just the bottom line. If somebody comes to you and say, I'd like to share what Yahweh had to say as accurately as possible, recognizing that I'm nobody special, but his words are special. That's somebody you want to test to make sure they're doing the job right, but that's somebody you could at least, you're not going to listen to them, but you're going to consider the translations that they're providing. But somebody that claims that they've got it going on, they don't have it going on. Now, the second thing is, the determination as to how do you pronounce the five vowels that are among the 22 Hebrew letters, 22 Hebrew letters, five vowels. How do you go and where would you search for direction and guidance and teaching and instruction on how to pronounce the letters that are found in the Hebrew alphabet? Is there a book of instruction?
Yeah. You'd go to the Torah, you know.
The Torah, yeah. That's that book of instruction and guidance on everything you need to know about Yahweh, including who he is and his name. What is that and that book, it's called the what again, Larry?
That'd be the Torah again. What
Torah.
What Dode's discussing
and how
here,
is Torah
over
spelled?
Over. That was with T W R H,
right?
Or R.
Here's a Torah, and the how was it pronounced again?
Torah.
Torah.
Object.
Torah. T W.
Torah.
R H, and there are two consonants and two vowels in Torah. The T, the ta, is a consonant. The wa is a vowel. The resh is a consonant. The hey is a vowel. Torah. That's, and does not then Torah explain every letter that you need to pronounce Yahweh's name? Now, I understand that there is a letter in Yahweh's name that's not in Torah, but is there anybody that's questioning the pronunciation of the Hebrew Y, which is pronounced the same in English? No one.
No.
So every letter that you need, it's just so obvious that the
there's
the
a group out
is,
there that's got everything a U. There was no O's. Oh, so I guess Goyim was really Guyim. Gooey. Moed was mud. You know, I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah, it becomes insane. Now, I want to tell you, there is a possibility that in some cases the wa may have been pronounced as a u. Personally,
teruah.
Yeah, teruah. For example, I think there is a possibility that sometimes, just as in the if you look at the English w, most of the time that you see an English w, it has the vowel o before it or after it.
Like owl. Yeah,
yes,
sure.
Or one, you know, it our own, our oath. In fact, oath is actually a Hebrew word transliterated into English. But there are sometimes, what do we call the English letter? The double U, right? So there are some times where a wa in Hebrew could have been pronounced with the U sound. But it's a distinct minority, and the high likelihood is if you're just going to use logic and reason, Yahuda would be Yahuda, and that the name associated with the place and the people would have had an O sound originally, and it was lost over time. Because religious Jews didn't want to include Yahweh's name in those important words, and I think that
may well be. But the same people that claim that it's a U in Yahweh, and I don't fight about that. Where I come down on them pretty hard is when instead of writing Shalom, they write Shalom. I know you don't have to see this every day, but and instead of writing Torah, James, I'm serious, but they write Tura. I think that they come from the Flintstones. I mean, it's just.
I want to tell you, there are four Hebrew words. There are four Hebrew words that I'm absolutely certain have not been corrupted over time because they have been pronounced over time. The single most common Hebrew word pronounced throughout time is shalom.
Mm-hmm.
And the O in shalom is from the Hebrew wa. The second
well,
is
you can find
because,
text where it is transliterated into other languages.
Correct.
And so we can
shalom.
Look at how it's transliterated into these languages and determine how it was pronounced at that time.
Right. Shalom has not changed. Torah has not changed. Torah is one of the most profound nouns in the speech of hundreds of different languages. Torah is one of those words that has been conveyed as Torah for thousands of years. So Torah, Shalom, Goy and Goyim, and Elohim. Those four, no change.
And Eloah.
Elohim is based on Eloah. Eloah.
Yeah,
so that
I know.
Is the basis
it's
of Eloah.
Hello, no matter how you set the pie. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other affirmation is that there are about 50 or so names in Hebrew that are based upon Yao. Yoel, for example.
Yob.
Yonah. Yeah, Yonah.
Yeah.
He
was Yob.
Right, every lexicon recognizes that the Yao is a familial contracted form of Yahweh comprising these names. And yet there's not a single name that is UL or Yub or or I don't know what else.
Maybe Yub is really Yub. Hey, Yub is like the southern version of Israel, you know, kind of thing. I don't know. You know,
no,
but they sound absolutely
ignorant.
We're not
trying to make fun here. What we're trying to say is that just as we began by talking about the negativity associated with the military, and we find that when Yahweh tells us that something's not good for us and we need to disassociate with it if we want to associate with him, we will constantly find that his advice is sound, that the thing that he is asking us to walk away from is not good. The same thing is true from the positive side, which is that if Yahweh provides teaching, as he says here, you have completely laid out your just, fair, unwavering, vindicating, restoring, and enduring testimony, and exceedingly reliable, totally trustworthy, and always dependable nature. God did not shortchange us in the ability to know and understand. Therefore, the natural conclusion from this statement in Psalm 119, 138 is all of the information we need to ascertain how to pronounce Yahweh's name and what he, who he is and what he is offering is included in his Torah, because that's all Dode had to comment on. He's only commenting on the Torah, and he's saying that the Torah gives everything you need to know. It's completely and totally laid out. It's in the peel perfect.
There's another reason that this bothers me, and you're right, all this. I'm saying this also. It goes against Yahweh's nature to hide his name.
Correct.
You know, Yahweh didn't say, I'm going to hide my name. He says, I want you to hold my name up. My family knows my name. It's the love of the name that makes you family, and on and on and on. His name's very important. He wanted to hide it so bad, he shared it with us 7,000 times. And
right.
So the nonsensical religious belief that Yahweh hid his name is moronic. It's moronic.
Is Yahweh's name
he shared it in all those
other
ways
than the 22 that comprise every word in the Hebrew Torah? Isn't Yahweh's name comprised of the same letters that are found
yes.
throughout
yes.
the Torah?
Yes, the same ones that make Eloah and Goyim and
Torah.
Or light.
Right, and Torah. Know. And Torah.
Torah, Shalom.
Absolutely. So,
yes.
This statement in 138 of the 119th Psalm tells us that it's all there. Everything we need to know is there. Yahweh makes it emphatic that the love of his name is an essential part of knowing who he is and being saved by him, being included in the covenant family. The notion that he would have shortchanged us the information necessary to figure out how to pronounce his name is totally contrary to this statement and to his nature. You don't
what,
say
what,
that the name,
you know,
the love of the name
Torah,
is the most important thing. I'm going to hide it.
Look at the base root words, Tob. Tob. What's the word to believe that's Tub? I mean,
right.
Really?
Yeah, Tob is the Hebrew word for good. He says his Torah is Tob. Torah is good. It's healing. It's beneficial. So I'm
sorry to get us off track here. It was just a pet peeve of mine. You know, it's gotten to the point when I see people doing it, I wish I could just yank them out of there and say, you know, be a little rational here. Just work at it a little bit.
Well, you're not off track because this passage is one of my very favorites. You have completely laid out your just, fair, unwavering, vindicating, restoring, and enduring testimony, and exceedingly reliable, totally trustworthy, and always dependable nature. What Dode is telling us, and he's righteous, he's inspired by Yahweh, He is the basis of the millennial Shabbat. He is God's favorite person in the history of humanity. And he concluded, based on the Torah alone, that God told us everything we need to know, and that what he told us was unwavering, vindicating, restoring, trustworthy, and dependable. It's all there. Everything you need to know. And it's completely trustworthy. It's unchanging. It's unwavering. It's all there in the Torah. I would dare say that once you get past the first three books of the Torah, you know everything you need to know. Are there some things that are revealed in Devarim that are helpful? Absolutely. But everything in Devarim is really a summary of, a perspective on, an emphasis of what's in Bereshith, Shemot, and Kara. It's all there. I mean, who Yahweh is, what he's offering through the covenant, and how to walk to him and achieve all of its benefits. It's all there. Not my opinion. Yahweh's statement. In fact, would Yahweh have said the Torah is complete, lacking nothing? Would he have said, don't add anything to it, don't subtract anything from it? Would Yahusha say that not a single jot or tittle, even the stroke of a letter, is going to change if the Torah was incomplete?
No, he wouldn't have. Everything he says is 100%. The rest of it was to help guide us through the Torah.
Yeah. Man, I like having the prophets, and the prophets have Torah.
Oh, I do too. Yeah.
Now, the prophets are filled with Torah teaching. The Psalms are absolutely filled with Torah teaching. But you don't need anything more than Yahweh's teaching. His direction is absolutely sufficient. And I would go to the point of saying that what this says is that if you're open-minded, willing to invest the time, that everything you need to know is provided there and more, and that it provides a lifetime of enjoyment and enlightenment and edification and benefit.
Well, you know, not to turn back to that movie last night, but as I watched that, knowing what I know today and sitting there, I said, you know, they're pretty slick with the confusion.
Yeah, they are.
Really? I mean, you know, I didn't buy an ounce of it. But I sit there and looked at it, and I said, yeah, that's how things get twisted.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And it's intentional. It's always intentional.
Yeah. Oh, patriotism is intentional. How do you get people to sacrifice their money and their freedoms to support something that is so destructive? You have to lie to them. My anger is beyond. This is a place where I identify with Dode. I think you guys do as well. My anger is beyond frustrating because they have totally ignored and have improperly responded to your word, making them my adversaries and someone to be opposed. That's 139.
Oh. Yeah, and let's all just pause there. Salah, you know, sit there for a moment and think about this. So many people, you know, the religious myth is that you sit down and you bend over backwards and you carry water to them and you force feed the milk down their throat and all this stuff. No, you don't. You share Yahweh's words, and when they openly oppose them and walk away, you say, okay, good. Good. Go away. You know?
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Entirely too much hand-holding going on, you know. I've gotten to a place where I don't handhold people. People with honest questions, I want to share answers if I have them, but I'm going to share them through Yahweh's words, you know.
Yes.
And you either believe Yahweh's words or you don't.
This says several things. One is that this myth of that we shouldn't be judgmental is ridiculous. This says that this myth that we are supposed to not be argumentative when people are saying things that are inconsistent with Yah's testimony is ridiculous. This idea that it is compassionate and caring to never be angry is absurd. You know, this thing now that they talk about hate speech and how you can't, we have to constrain hate speech. Doad is talking hate
speech. They're just trying to sterilize the argument. They don't want anybody to bring anything up that might be true. That's what's going on here.
Yahweh gets angry. And those who know Yahweh, those who align their perspective so it's consistent with Yahweh, get angry. Now, we don't get angry at stupid mistakes. We get angry when people are doing things that are counterproductive, that are leading people away from God. And Doad here is saying, my anger is beyond frustrating. You know, it's so sad to me that God has laid out everything we need to know perfectly and completely in a fair and an obvious manner in his Torah, and those who claim as experts to be speaking for God totally and completely contradict him. Pisses me off thinking of the number of people that these self-righteous buffoons have led away from God. Makes me mad. I mean, I'm flat out angry. I'm angry at our politicians and our clerics and our academicians, all of whom are lying. I mean, it should make us mad. Makes God mad. Makes those who know God mad. You know, Larry, there was a period of time where you know, I got lots of emails that said, Larry, he's just too mean. No, he's not too mean. His anger.
I think you were the only guy saying that, but yeah, I appreciated that, by the way, because you know, when I see people openly, because I didn't just attack them, I would show them Yahweh's words. Here's what he has to say about it.
Right.
And then they still just run right in opposition.
Well, you know. And the proper response is to emulate Yahweh's response. And Yahweh's response is to be angry.
Well, I would flat out condemn them. I would flat out condemn them. I'll still do it today. You know, the idea that you're not to be judgmental is stupid.
Those who ignore and improperly respond to the Torah, to Yahweh's words, are his adversaries, someone to oppose.
That makes him my adversary.
Right. That means that your response to them is the correct response. It's the godly response. It's the most compassionate response, actually. The most loving thing you can do is to vehemently oppose those who respond improperly to and ignore Yahweh's words. That is the loving thing to do. It's the appropriate thing to do. It's the compassionate thing to do. It's the wise thing to do. It's the rational thing. It's the moral thing to do. Doad figured that out, and when we are confrontational with people who have either misinterpreted or ignored or improperly responded to the Torah, which is 99.999% of humanity, we're aggressive. We're angry. We view them as adversaries. They're God's adversaries. So they're our adversaries. Powerful instruction here as to how we go about engaging. Then he says, your word is exceedingly refining, purifying, and perfecting, purging and removing flaws and impurities, and your servant, your co-worker and associate, genuinely love them. You want to be perfected? Study the Torah. You want to be refined? Study the Torah. You want to have your flaws removed? Follow the Torah's guidance.
You know, and the Torah is full of people that die. It really is. Full of people that die. And why do each and every one of them die? They didn't listen to Yahweh's words. And they didn't care about his Torah. They all died.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why I'm convinced that the reason Yahusha said that every jot and tittle of the Torah will remain in full effect while the heavens and earth exist is that once we have concluded the millennial Shabbat and the last mortals making a choice are no longer around, once we've reached that point, then we're to the point where the bad behavior that is condemned in the Torah, that say, don't do this, this the consequence is going to be death, that once we reach that point, we really need advice that is quite different. Not contradictory different, just different in terms of its scope. It's not going to... We need advice as to how to operate as members of Yahweh's family without goofing stuff up, as opposed to advice on, you know, how to come to know Yahweh. We already know him. We don't need, you know, advice as to what we can do that's wrong that will get us into to trouble as it relates to religion and politics. There won't be any. So, you know, it will be a different level of guidance when we're in his family and are purely spiritual in nature. So this says, I am young and physically unimpressive, and I'm poorly regarded. And yet I have not overlooked nor neglected your precept, those instructions which you have entrusted to us for guidance so that we can respond correctly to you. So Dode is making the point that is that we make all the time. It's just that in... You know, Dode's kind of in a different position. You know, he's king of Yisrael. He is the kingdom upon which the millennial Shabbat is going to be based. He's the one person that Yahweh says, man, that guy, he's righteous. I love him. And yet he's saying, I'm unimpressive.
Yeah, that's an amazing thought that Dode would be unimpressive. Wow, he was the king. You know,
right.
And of course, I think he saw himself just as, you know, humanly flawed as anybody. That's where he was at.
Yeah, the reason that he becomes righteous, the reason he becomes a tool that Yahweh can use is because he did not think of himself as being important.
Yeah, kind of like the opposite of Paul. Like that.
Exactly.
He didn't run around saying he was the biggest know-it-all in town and knew the Torah up, down, and sideways, even though he did compared to anybody else. I mean, you know, and he said, you know, I'm Joe Nobody. And
right.
You say I'm poorly regarded. Wow.
Right.
You know, I mean, wow.
And that's extraordinarily important from our perspective because here's the guy that Yahweh regards more highly than anyone else, and he says of himself, I'm poorly regarded. The guy that Yahweh views as the most impressive, so impressive that he constantly refers to him throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. I mean, he is constantly, Yahweh is talking about the kingdom of Dode and how important that is going forward. And so here's the guy that is the most impressive to Yahweh. And he says of himself, I'm unimpressive.
And I'm poorly regarded.
Useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the attitude we all come into this with. That apart from him, we are unimpressive. But because he didn't overlook or neglect the appropriate means to respond to Yahweh, the Pekudim, he is the most highly regarded of all humans. He's the author of these beautiful songs. And he figured out what's important.
You know, if you think about it, as people find themselves important, mm-hmm. say as Paul did, they have to be completely delusional.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you are presumptuous and indeed delusional. When you're presumptuous when you claim to be important, and you're delusional when you claim to be important as a conduit to God.
I mean, every historian will tell you, you know, when they start getting into people, all these flaws and how this happened and how that happened and how, you know, basically everything's done by a big PR stunt, right?
Right?
Yeah. That's what ends up happening. You know, nobody's very impressive when it gets right down to it.
Like maybe it's saying, you know, I'm impressive in one way, my stupidity is epic, my ignorance is legendary. You know, JB is, in terms of just raw intellect, is probably the smartest member of our group. In terms of just...
I would disagree.
Yeah, I would think in terms of cognitive ability, you're probably the smartest in our group, and yet you view yourself as ignorant. And, you know, it's the humility that we approach Yahweh, that when we view ourselves as flawed and inadequate, we become perfect and adequate, and more than adequate. That was the case with Dodd. The more he viewed himself as flawed, the more perfect he became. He got out of the way to let Yahweh vindicate. Then he says, that which is righteous and vindicating is always and eternally righteous and vindicating. So your Torah is trustworthy, reliable, and enduring. Boy, we really have a difference here between Paul and Dodd, don't we? Who do you suppose is right?
I would say Dodd.
Yeah, I would say Dodd. Yeah, did Yahweh ever say, I'm going to
so
base
would
my
God.
my millennial Shabbat, when I return, I'm going to establish the kingdom of Shaul? When I come to earth, I'm going to reestablish the kingdom of Shaul. I don't recall him ever saying that. But I recall him saying throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, that he is going to establish, not the Torah, but certainly the prophets and Psalms, that he is going to establish, reestablish the kingdom of Dodd. And Dodd figured out that, you know, if it's righteous and vindicating, it's always righteous and vindicating. If it's right, it's always right. It's not right for a short period of time and then wrong. If it's right, it's right for all time. Eternally. And therefore, your Torah is trustworthy, reliable, and dependable. That is the profound statement that Christians don't seem to get. If God inspired the Torah, if the Torah is not righteous and vindicating, then God cannot be trusted. And your New Testament is rubbish. And if Yahweh inspired the Torah, and if the Torah is righteous and vindicating, then your New Testament, which is in conflict with it, is rubbish. No matter which way you go, the New Testament is rubbish. Because that which is righteous and vindicating is always and eternally righteous and vindicating, and that is why the Torah is reliable and enduring. It's consistently and always true. It is the source of righteous vindication. This statement means there can be no New Testament. There can be no gospel of grace. There can be no Pauline Christianity. The Torah is true, was true, is true, will always be true. It ends the argument. And, you know, in those Christian Bibles, they all have this psalm. A psalm where this statement is completely and totally in conflict with their religion, with Paul's letters that comprise half of their New Testament. Your Torah is trustworthy, reliable, and enduring. It's immense, unwavering, unchanging, dependable, and everlasting. Pretty straightforward. Then he says, narrow-minded and hard-headed adversaries and those who inflict suffering find me enjoying the terms and conditions of your relationship agreement, of your mitzvah. It is, I think, most of our conclusions, if not all of our conclusions, that the thing that precludes most people from benefiting from the Torah is that they're narrow-minded, they're hard-headed, they're not open. It's a combination of
they're very
things.
Limiting. There's no doubt about that. They're very limiting. They don't, you know, I mean, it's like you going in or me going in or JB going in to debate the young earth theory of the Christian Science people.
Right.
And you tell them, look.
Hard-headed, narrow-minded.
You know, unless Yahweh was standing on this planet at the time he made the universe, 6 days is not 6 days, you know, from our perspective.
Right. And I don't think he's standing on our planet while he made the universe.
When he made the universe. It didn't exist. Yeah,
correct.
I know. And
you
try to lay that out to them, and you know, I had one of them say, well, that's quite a theory you have. It's not my theory.
You know, our sun is a second-generation star. Not even a first-generation star.
Yeah.
It wasn't part of those that were created in the Big Bang. And our planet, which is comprised of the heavy elements, the heavy elements are only created in the supernova explosions. And the supernova explosions are only the result of very large stars dying. So that's a star that's gone through its entire life cycle and then has died that creates the heavy elements that create the possibility of a planet like our Earth. And so we have to be the residue of a second generation star.
Well, see, now you're getting into too much reality here for a young science person, and that's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about tunnel vision. We're talking about willful stupidity. Willful stupidity. That's what it is.
I think that we find universally that the only people who can benefit from Yahweh's testimony and can participate in the covenant are those who are open-minded, those who are motivated to know the truth, willing to invest the time that it takes to engage Yahweh's word, to observe Yahweh's word, to know who he is and what he's offering and how to respond, and who are willing to go where the words lead. It takes both an open-mindedness and desire. And without both, you aren't ever going to find it. But with both, you will always find it. Well, guys, we've come to the end of the broadcast portion of the program. We're still recording, but I love this ending, which is the realization that the thing that separates those who are members of the covenant and those who are not is their narrow-mindedness, their hard-headedness, their aversion to Yahweh. And that, according to Dode, it's those who are narrow-minded and hard-headed who actually inflict the suffering on others, because the narrow-minded and hard-headed are the faithful, the patriotic, the political, the militaristic. They anguish the world. They are the source of affliction. And yet, while they're producing their destruction, you know, as America goes and bombs communities in Syria and makes the weapons of war, they're going to find us enjoying the relationship agreement. While the world evolves and devolves into chaos and to terror and to destruction, all of the members of the covenant will be found enjoying the conditions of the relationship agreement. This also emphasizes the first point we made in the program tonight, an hour and a half ago, which is that the terms and conditions, the things that are expected of us, the five things expected of us in the covenant, Dode viewed them as benefits. He says that he was enjoying them. He was finding pleasure in them. He found happiness in the conditions of the covenant. That explains the very peace, the liberation that we find in being liberated from human institutions when we participate in the covenant. When we engage in the five conditions of the covenant, we ultimately find the same enjoyment, that they are benefits to us just as the benefits of the covenant bring happiness and pleasure.
I had engaged in a conversation with somebody that recently, you know, joined Unpopular Truth Group, and she had told me that one of the things that she had thought about was, I've got to, you know, seek and you will find. You know, that was kind of, and that's kind of where I started. And she said, and I asked, you know, God to know his name. And that's exactly what I did. And that's exactly where I started. And it wasn't a day later, I heard you on the radio. What do you think of that?
Wow.
And she's same exact start. You know, it's telling me people that earnestly seek the truth find it. I mean, it's about that simple. But you have to earnestly seek the truth, and you got to be prepared to, you know, say, okay, I've been wrong, and everybody's been wrong and taught me.
Yeah, and I think that somewhere along the way, you've got to exercise your nesama. You've got to be willing to differentiate between things that are conflicting. You know, if you read in your Christian New Testament that the Torah cannot save, and then you read in the Torah that it's the source of salvation, you have
it's
a conflict.
The only source of salvation.
Yes. So you have a conflict. And what are you going to do with that conflict? You know, if you're not,
well, you
got to
follow Yahweh's words. I mean, this is supposedly you're interested in, you know, and that's kind of the problem, isn't it? Where people say, well, I want to please God. And that's another thing. Your will be done. Well, what's Yahweh's will?
For us to participate in the covenant.
The covenant. No, I don't have to say, you know, I mean, think about it. What did you put me here for? Well, you put me here to have a relationship. Yeah.
Since I have been studying the Torah, I have never once asked Yahweh, what is your will for my life? I know what
you don't have to ask.
Life.
He tells
it's
you 10,000 times.
Your life, Larry, and your life, JB, and all of us, his will
to
know him, to love him, to engage in his covenant. And when we engage in his covenant, we are naturally motivated to emulate him, which is to share his truth and expose lies. That's it. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, and we do both. And I think exposing the lies is pretty important too. You know, that's you get separation that way. Anything that separates out is, I found to be a pretty good thing.
You know, I think that when you study the Torah, a substantial portion of the Torah is exposing lies. You know, a substantial portion of the Torah is revealing the truth, and a substantial part of the Torah is revealing lies. It's just like being a dad or a mom, that is our responsibility to tell our children what is good for them, but also we have a responsibility to tell them what's harmful to them. The Torah does both. And so if we're going to follow Yahweh's direction, if we're going to be consistent with him, we're going to do both. And both are important.
Right. Well,
I don't
it's
think
almost
you can
shocking.
Know the truth unless you are aware of all of the human lies.
Yeah, that's right. But, it's shocking where some people are at. I mean, shocking. Some people have got to be about as smart as a rock. I mean, I am telling you, I actually had one woman, and you guys are going to laugh. I might have brought this up before. It was so outrageous. She said that Jesus was going to defeat Yahweh.
Believe that when I was in, oh man, this
my
woman
right
is out to lunch.
I was thinking, you moron.
Yeah, yeah, tell me how that's possible.
Yahweh.
Yes. Yeah, tell me how that's possible.
Well, no, I couldn't tell you how that's impossible. Yahusha is Yahweh, but diminished part of Yahweh. He kept saying, me and my father are one. Blah, 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 everything else.
Prince is going to beat up the creator of the universe.
He's going to beat up the father that he pointed to go get all the advice from. He's going to defeat him now.
A man's going to defeat God.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Good luck, and tell me
how you could have a Jesus when there was no J until the 17th century.
Well, you know, you could ask her.
And why
that,
is your God named you after know. Zeus?
Yeah, Essus, Druid Savior.
Why does your God have a corrupted Greek name?
You weren't kidding.
Yeah.
You know, it's shocking. I'm telling you, it's shocking out there. Some
it
of the
shocking.
Things that you see. I just, you get some people that, you know, they want to debate their deep points of their theology that they send to you. Well, I'm getting it right out of the, you know, it's raw material here. And I think I'm dealing with a lot of their followers. And, wow, you know, it wouldn't be too hard, too difficult to get a lot of people to follow you down the road, believe me. Because you can say anything. Paul figured that out, right? I mean, you can say
exactly.
Anything.
People want to be led. Very few people want to think for themselves. So if you're willing to tell them this is what you need to think, they will follow you in droves.
That's correct.
You know what Joel Osteen said? You know what he said? The point of Noah's Ark was that God wants us all to have a yacht.
No.
How's that for
really?
Astounding?
Yes,
that's
wrong.
An actual quote
fun,
from this guy. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
God wants you to buy me a yacht.
Is that why there was one
ark and not eight for the eight people? Is that why there was one ark for all of the animals?
Well, they should have had eight yachts.
And the purpose
right
of the ark...
That.
Was to save life.
I don't know.
And
what
if you had your yacht, would you take it out into the worst storm that Earth has ever experienced?
Well, obviously.
You're actually looking at the actual event
and
explaining it.
Could you tell me what kind of a propulsion system was there on the Ark? Did it have sails? No. Did it have a motor? No. So it was neither a motor yacht nor a sailing yacht, huh? Okay. Did the
he probably
did the
didn't
Ark
have a jacuzzi in there? Even.
Did the Ark
no,
have
I
a
mean,
jacuzzi? Did it have a fly bridge? Did it have a master suite? Did it have a pilot house? Did it have anything
I'm telling you.
Associated with a yacht? Did it have a swim step? I mean, come on. I mean, the whole thing is just. So completely absurd. You know, the Ark is
the Israelites build a temple is he wants us all to have mansions.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a connection between the Ark that saved Noah and his family and the Ark of the Covenant?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And
I
you
really
think
do.
That connection is us all owning yachts?
I hadn't really considered that until Joel brought it up, and I thought, wow, he must be one deep thinker, and I've just been involved in intense study to prove him right ever since, and I just can't do it.
That the Ark of the Covenant is a means to safely endure all that the world can throw at you, and to safely navigate to an opportunity to live forever with Yahweh. That is the Ark of the Covenant, and it resembles the Ark that Yahweh designed and that Noah built.
Well, there's stuff out here. There's popular people. You got the other guy, the other big one. I forget his name. That started a group called Chrislam, as you know.
Yeah, that's Rich Warren.
That's the other clown.
California. Yeah, he is a political junkie and a religious junkie. He's a very, very dangerous man.
Well,
and
yeah.
You got Hakey writing about four blood moons and anything that'll make you nick.
I have shared that radio program with a number of people, by the way. I love it. You know, you're just on there going, well, let's see, he only missed it by 173 years and it was in the wrong place. You know, and you're sitting there going, you know, you wouldn't think by I never picked up the book and read it. I don't read material from, you know, religious people, but the fact that you suffered it and actually looked at what he was saying and exposed it, I mean, if anybody could buy that, they have to be completely stupid.
They just don't bother to check his research. They take what he says.
Well, you can say, well, that's the point. You can say anything.
What they think is that, you know, what are the odds that these four most important dates in the history of Israel were all coexistent with four blood moons. There's no chance that could have been by chance. It had to be the hand of God. And then you realize, wait a minute. First of all, not one of those events is important in the life of Israel. They didn't hit one at the right time. Most of them are irrelevant to Israel. And none of the total eclipses that were supposed to be signs to Israel could have been seen in Israel.
Oh, and they were usually
excuse me for you know, the way you laid it out there. It was a beautiful show. Like I said, I've shared it over and over. I've listened to it a couple times and had a good laugh.
Yeah, and most of the signs, by the way, were after the fact.
Yeah,
which makes them really,
I know,
really a wonderful.
Well, that's a great sign. You know,
that's like putting a sign to the next intersection, a mile and a half past the intersection, and say, "Hey, stupid, you missed it." Oh goodness!
It goes on and on, man. It's welcome to the world. I mean,
it is a freak show out there. The hand of God. When a blood moon is a full eclipse. Every full eclipse is a blood moon.
Yeah, right.
And it's only a blood moon,
sure.
Not because of the hand of God, but because of the when the sun's light passes through the Earth's atmosphere, it's bent, and the longest wavelength, which is red, is bent more than the shortest wavelength, which is violets and blues. Therefore, the light that is bent around the Earth's atmosphere and therefore does strike the moon when the moon falls in the Earth's shadow, is the red hues. So the moon takes on a reddish hue because of the nature of the Earth's atmosphere and the nature of light. Just like light is, the angle of reflection of light is different in water, it's different in the Earth's atmosphere than it is in space without the atmosphere. That's 100% of the cause of it. It's not the hand of God. And it occurs at every single full eclipse, without exception.
How dare you
contradict
my pastor with all your fancy science.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, every sukkah occurs at a full moon. All eclipses occur during full moons. Every Passover and Matzah occurs in a full moon. And so the proclivity of eclipses on those dates is 29.5 times greater than the proclivity of eclipses at any other time. Because it's only one day out of every 29 and a half that there's a full moon, and a full eclipse can only occur at a full moon. I mean, so the fact that there are blood moons and associated with Pesach and with Sukkah shouldn't be a surprise because they both occur on full moons. One's the 14th day of the month. The other one's the 15th day of the month. You know, there's 29.5 days in a month.
You know, I would have loved to have seen you on another microphone, like talking when he was presenting his plan to the boobs that follow him. I really would have, but
yeah,
of course they never would allow something like that.
It's
sort of like allowing real questions in a political press conference. You know, it's just something that's not going to be allowed.
Yeah, to say the most important days in the history of Israel. You know, my guess would be that the most important day in the history of Israel would have been pizza, matzah, and bakurim in 33 CE.
Yeah, you can't get much more important than that.
No blood moons. And the second most important is going to be Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim in 2033. Not Pesach, I mean, but Yom Kippurim and Sukkah in 2033 CE. You're 6,000, yeah. No four blood moons.
No blood moon there?
No. I mean, come on.
Well, there'll be one about 3 to 4 years later. And that'll be the song.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you missed it.
Yeah, again, you missed the intersection, buddy.
And I just love the fact that not a single one of these full eclipses that were supposed to be prophetic signs for Israel was visible in Israel. God was a really bad aimer. And then this the one about the Jews in Spain, which was a prophetic sign for Israel, was indicative of the torch being passed from Jews to Christians and to America and to the New World. And so the purpose of that sign and
that's
the four blood moons was to say that America was the new Israel. That's what he wrote.
Wow. That's an amazing thought. Who dreams this shit up, Yada? Do you know? I mean, I understand he plagiarized a whole lot of it, but I mean, you know, where is this coming from?
Yeah. Well, that is standard Christian replacement theology. That was right from St. Augustine forward. Is that the Christian Church inherited all the promises and all of the benefits associated with Israel, and that the Jews became God's enemy, and the church became his new family. That's standard Christian theology. And of course, Christians believe that America is the beneficiary of all of those things, particularly Protestant Christians.
Well, you know, you're going to make a lot more money telling Americans and Christians in America that, you know, God is with you and God loves you than you are telling them the truth. God hates your country. And God wants you to have nothing to do with it.
Right. Yeah.
You're
God bless America.
Not going to make a lot of money telling them that.
No. God has never blessed America. He has no involvement in America. Doesn't like America. And his only statements about America are in the 18th chapter of Yeshayah. And he begins
where he uses the word "woe."
Woe.
Yeah, this is bad news. Yeah, and you know what? Even telling people that, I've shared that note. And I got to tell you, I've had people read it and go, that's right. Yeah, you know, you start looking at it and you really start scrutinizing and breaking it down. There's only one country he's talking about in the final days with a giant navy that's yanking people around and involved in Israeli politics. There's only one country. I mean, that's it.
Yep.
Name another one.
It's obvious. And even though it's obvious, we continue to be on the wrong side. And yet we invoke God's name, actually his title. And, you know, God bless America. And every indication of the Roman Senate, I mean the American Senate, is God bless America.
I got to love that when political whores, and at this point that's all they are, stand up there and at the end of every speech with all this gusto say, and God bless America as they leave.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't even say it like they mean it. I mean, it's like putting a period at the end of a sentence and leaving. That's it. Yeah, I mean, it's pathetic. And it's hard for me to imagine that anybody believes that the clowns that they put up there as these political actors even run anything. I mean, I know they dole out money and they make deals and they get to cut off a certain piece for themselves. But, you know, when you got guys that's never even had a job and they're setting up one world governments, you can't assume it came from him, can you?
No.
Yeah, it's just
no.
I sit there and I say, I can't even believe people believe this stuff. You know, but apparently they do. I was so proud of myself. You know, I was not even aware it was a voting day. I was so busy working.
I had
that
same exact realization. I happened to flip on something and they were talking about election. I was getting my inspection done and I was at the car place and the TV had on. I was like, oh, it's an election day.
Yeah,
my friends would get together and have, you know, viewing parties watching the election returns. And I was like, that level of obsessed with it. And now it's like, oh, hey, that happened.
I knew it was approaching because of all the news stories that I chose not to cover about who is going to take control of the Senate. And I didn't cover any of those news stories, so shattering myths. And I got back here. And I went out to breakfast with my wife, and the restaurant was just jammed. And I asked the waitress, why so many people for breakfast? And they said, because school's out, and so the parents are having to take care of their kids, and they don't know how to feed them, so they bring them here. And because they closed the schools for Election Day. And then I said, oh, yeah, well, that's the last thing I want to participate in. My wife reminds me, says, you know, you're spending most of your time in California. You're a Virginia resident. The thing that they use to determine whether or not you are a legitimate resident is to whether you actually vote in person. So I think it's probably important that you vote. And I said, so long as I check in to vote, it doesn't matter who I vote for. I can vote for none of the above, and it still counts. He says, yes. So I went in and voted for none of the above.
I think JB and I had this conversation. No, it might have been Steve and I had this conversation where it's like people are out there constantly voting for the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, of course.
You know.
And I don't really
if you're
think, and
doing
in most
that,
cases,
you're...
there really isn't a lesser of two evils.
Yeah, well, that's, I'm sorry, Scott and I, rather, I meant.
Right.
And you know, it is true that's what the majority of people do. They vote for the lesser of two evils.
Right.
The lesser of two. So by voting for the lesser of two evils, you're voting for evil, right?
Evil. And you're assigning yourself.
If you have a choice between Stalin and Hitler, who do you vote for?
If you have a choice between Barack Obama or John McCain, who are you going to vote for?
I don't vote.
Right.
I didn't vote, and I won't vote. You know, but I sit there.
I wrote in Yahweh. That's who I'm voting for
from
now on. Yahweh for president.
There you go.
You know, I look at that stuff. I really look at that. You know, one of the things they did was marched out, you know, all these people that were going into the Senate were, you know, and this is the first time I've even watched news, you know, regular channel news in years. But I was just watching some of the returns when I found out, and it was like 2 a.m. when I turned it on and I was watching it. And they were talking about how the majority of the Republican senators were brought up there to get rid of Obamacare. Now, by the way, I hope Obamacare does go away. You know,
that is
an economy killer.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there looking at it, and they started saying, although that's not going to happen, this was the next thing. Right behind, they were all elected to get rid of it, but that's not going to happen. What they can do is they can target certain aspects of it. And I thought, wow, they're going to sell it through the Republicans by getting rid of certain aspects, like now you can use your own doctor if they get their way, or this or that. And I thought, so that's how you're going to sell Obamacare through the Republicans. That's how it looked to me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're going to placate
right
the Republicans by striking a little bit here and a little bit there, and then the Republicans are going to be happy, like, oh, see, we stopped Obamacare. Well, we have this little bit of it here, but, yeah, that part we're okay with, but we did it.
Yeah, sorry.
and the Democrats get everything that they want anyway.
And you know, they say they're going to have tax reform. They're not going to get any tax reform through in the next 2 years. They say they're going to have energy reform. They're not going to get any energy reform passed in the next 2 years. What are they going to accomplish?
No, they were making it clear that Obama can just, you know, by executive order, knock every one of these things down. And they still can't find freedom because they don't have the votes in the Senate. And I was just going, this is the same old song and dance. And it's hard for me to imagine that people aren't seeing through it, but they aren't.
Yeah.
By and large, they aren't, and they won't.
No.
Everything in Washington,
all once
two
again,
steps forward, three steps back.
John was told us to walk away from this, from country, from politics, and when we examine politics and politicians, what do we find? Evil. That which is unreliable, that which is bad for us. So, you know, you find out that what his advice is always good.
Yeah, because if you want to step inside the matrix where the conversation is really just on the fringes, I mean, think about it. You've got a multi-trillion-dollar budget, and you're talking about cutting $3 billion, and you have this six-week argument, and all these debates are thrown on television, you know, for months, you know, because I see them on Drudge. I mean, then why are you debating about a few billion dollars? This is just a joke.
Well, it's not even cutting the rate of increase. That's all they do nowadays. It just cuts the rate of increase.
Well, of course, that's all it's ever been. But
we say that
how do you have a rigorous debate about
$3
billion?
We reduce the amount we're adding to the deficit. And we call that a cutting in the deficit.
But how do you have a rigorous debate about a few billion dollars? It's just laughable. You know, why wouldn't you have a debate about why is it that the Federal Reserve System is running the operation? Why do we pay them all this interest? Why don't we own our own printing press? And as you pointed out before, you don't even need a printing press anymore. You just need a computer screen where you can make numbers up. I mean, it's just outrageous. The whole thing's outrageous.
Yeah,
but
the
voting,
if you
want to
deal with the federal
there,
budget, there's only three things that matter. You know, it's Medicare. It's the Social Security and it's the military. That's it. You can't change the size of the federal government. Can't change the deficit.
Well, right. That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
And
the
since these
program.
Things are all off the table, as they say,
there you go.
It really doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah. Well, fellas,
you can cut all
the
rest of it by 100%, and it ain't making a difference.
And it's you'll have a 15% reduction, and you'll still have a gargantuan deficit.
That's right.
Of it doesn't matter. Yeah, the rest of it doesn't matter. All right, fellas, been fun. Thank you.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Hey, you guys have a good weekend.
You too.
Yep. You too.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.